The material shared within this podcast is based on the personal experiences and learnings of the presenter. Coloplast has paid the presenter for sharing this information. Nothing within this podcast is intended to be used as medical advice and/or used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Welcome to the Coloplast Professional Bowel and Bladder Matters podcast, where we explore various important topics related to ostomies and continence.
I'm your host, Belinda Coyle. I'm a registered nurse and clinical specialist at Coloplast. Today's podcast guest is Tamara Lewis. Dr. Lewis holds a board certification in female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery. She received her BA in biology from Luther College in 1994, and she obtained her medical doctorate in 1999 from the University of Iowa College of Medicine. In 2005, Dr. Lewis completed her surgical and urology residencies at the University of Nebraska, and then went on to complete a fellowship in female urology and voiding dysfunction at Metro Urology in Minneapolis-St. Paul, Minnesota. She currently practices at Comprehensive Urologic Care in Chicago, Illinois. Dr. Lewis's professional interests include management of incontinence, voiding dysfunction, bladder prolapse, and urinary tract infections. She is a member of the American Urological Association, the Society for Urodynamics and Female Urology, the Society for Women in Urology, and the Chicago Urologic Society, where she currently serves as president. In her spare time, Dr. Lewis enjoys reading, travel, and spending time with her family. Our topic today is the UTI risk factors model. Dr. Lewis, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm looking forward to learning from you.
Thank you.
So I think we'll start by having you describe the UTI risk factors model.
All right. Thanks for inviting me to join you today. So I was on a panel recently with Dr. Canelli, whose team came up with this very interesting risk factor model for use in an adult neurogenic population. And basically, we know this population is at risk for UTIs, but I think he took a very straightforward approach to identifying, you know, specific areas of concern and then giving patients, caregivers, educators some very straightforward ways to look at modifying some of the risks or managing the risks. Well, my general population is, you know, mostly women with non-neurogenic bladder, at least not diagnosed neurogenic bladder, who suffer with urinary tract infections as well. So my brain starts thinking, well, is there a way that I could use this as an education tool or reimagine some of the teaching points here to apply to that population? So been giving this some thought and thought we'd maybe try to discuss some of that today. So the UTI risk factor model basically takes patients with neurogenic bladder and goes over some of the different aspects that can potentially put them at risk. A lot of these patients use intermittent catheterization to empty their bladder because the bladder does not empty effectively on its own. So one quadrant of this risk factor model is going over intermittent catheterization and some factors associated specifically with that product procedure that can affect their risk of infections. There's one quadrant that goes over compliance to how do you use this tool effectively and what are some of the other factors over using this tool. The other two quadrants, one goes over the patient's past medical history. Are there some other things that are, you know, sort of specific to the patient overall that could affect their risk? And then some are specifically related to the bladder itself. So I kind of reimagine this where looking at a patient using intermittent catheterization or some tricks around intermittent catheterization to empty their bladder. I have a lot of patients out there who just do not empty their bladder well or don't understand the necessity of emptying their bladder effectively on a regular basis. And it's not that people are doing something wrong. It's how can I educate them, make them understand that getting all of the urine out of your bladder on a regular basis is very important to reducing infections. So how does a patient, empty their bladder? Well, you sit on the toilet and then something happens, but that doesn't necessarily just automatically happen. There's a series of things that have to happen for you to empty the bladder. There's a series of things that have to happen for you to get the urge or to understand the need to go empty the bladder. So kind of thinking of what is the whole process that happens. Does a patient have to pay attention to the urge? Does a patient not get an urge to go to the bathroom where they have to be put on a schedule to go on a regular basis? When you get the urge, what are the barriers in terms of getting to the bathroom? Is the bathroom upstairs? Do you use a walker? Are you outside and you have to stop doing what you're doing to come in to use the bathroom? So there are some factors that affect the number of times or basically the time from when you get the warning to, you know, to go use the bathroom. When someone gets to the bathroom, how do you empty the bladder? Well, you sit down, and then what's supposed to happen is you relax your pelvic floor muscles. When you relax your pelvic floor muscles, that sort of gives the bladder permission to go. Most of us kind of do this automatically and we don't really think about it. But for those muscles to relax, you kind of have to take away some of the white noise. Sometimes if you're thinking, oh, I've got to get out of here quickly, or I really don't want to sit on this seat, it's dirty, I'm just going to hover above it, those muscles may not relax. And so you may not, your bladder may not get the signal or may not empty effectively.
I was going to say, you definitely have to have those signals from the brain, you know, down the spinal cord, you know, to the bladder. It's a huge difference, as we know.
Yeah. Kind of continuing on with factors that, you know, sort of affect the ability of the bladder to work. How much fluid do you drink? If you don't drink a lot of fluid, you're not going to have that urge to go to the bathroom very often. So the proper amount of fluid and even drinking that fluid at the proper time. One of the things that I've found and have started to really just point out to patients is it's not just about how many ounces of fluid you drink a day, it's about when you drink those fluids during the day. So I have them do a diary and track that. How many ounces are you drinking in the morning and how many ounces are you drinking in the afternoon? And what I will find often is that people are really good about drinking fluids in the afternoon and evening, and then they're really surprised that they get up at night to go to the bathroom. And, you know, just even kind of pointing out on a chart that what goes in has to come out, and it's usually a certain number of hours that after it goes in that it comes out. Most people at night aren't getting up and drinking fluids, so they wake up in the morning, you're already a little bit dehydrated, and then if you have your cup of coffee and, oh, life gets busy and I'm on with my day, and then lunchtime comes around, oh yeah, I think I should get something to drink, but the water fountain is all the way down the hall, and then I find that really the bulk of people's fluid intake isn't until late in the day, and they're dehydrated half the day. Well, that in itself is a risk factor model or a risk factor, but it's a modifiable one. Just drink more fluid in the morning. But it's a very simple thing. But I think sometimes looking at people's habits and pointing out to them, it's, I see the light bulb go on, and it's really helpful.
That's what I was going to say. Like, there are the four quadrants with this risk factors model, but a lot of those factors are modifiable. So it's, you know, with patient education and them understanding the need for what they can change on their own can really make their bladder habits healthier.
Yeah, even a simple thing like, you know, like we've been talking about, just emptying the bladder efficiently on a regular basis is not necessarily an automatic guaranteed thing. So looking into all of these different, you know, factors, is the bladder full? Are you going to the bathroom? Can you empty efficiently when you get there? I mean, those are I think those are some important things.
The bladder emptying process seems like a very simple process, but we know that it can be a little more complicated than, you know, than what people think.
Right. I see a lot of patients with UTIs. I see a lot of patients with incontinence. And it's interesting, a lot of those patients, it's the same patient. And, you know, everyone's worried about, well, I'm leaking. What happens if the urine, you know, comes out when it's not supposed to? And I think there's a flip side to it, is you need to make sure that all of the urine comes out. So one of the tools that I will use, you know, to help patients, you know, hold their urine when they want to and empty it when they want to, is physical therapy or pelvic floor retraining. And I think that's a very powerful tool to educate, take away some barriers, stop women from fighting themselves. I find that a lot is nothing else getting in the way. It's just, you can't relax. And if you can't relax, you can't go. And, you know, giving some education and just understanding that that may be something that would be helpful, not only for bladder control, but also for bladder emptying, which can help prevent UTIs.
Absolutely. So I know that, you know, you mentioned the female adult, not primarily non-neurogenic population for your patient load. do you see that patient type, any change that you would need to kind of stray from this risk factors model, being that it was originally created for that adult neurogenic lower urinary tract dysfunction patient population?
And I think you're assuming a certain level of bladder dysfunction in a neurogenic population. And that's where looking at the four quadrants of the model, one is specifically dedicated to intermittent catheterization, or as I look at, you know, emptying the bladder and then factors around that. There's a lot of UTI risk factors that even in a patient with a neurologic condition that have nothing to do with that neurologic condition. It's a patient. That patient might have, you know, diabetes. That patient might have fluid retention. That, you know, that patient might have chronic constipation from other issues. That patient, there are a whole host of other conditions that could affect the bladder. And so not pinning all the problems on one diagnosis, but just looking at the big picture. And are there some other risk factors that we could work at? If it's a patient who's a diabetic, are we, you know, optimizing their A1C? Are we taking dietary factors into account for that? If it's a patient with fluid retention, kidney disease, heart disease, that affects when they make urine, when their kidneys make urine. And so, you know, are there some medications, behavioral strategies like elevating the legs, using compression stockings, things like that? Can we modify some of those things to optimize, you know, their overall bladder health? So there are a lot of other, you know, factors that are not specifically related to the condition of a neurogenic patient, and, you know, patients without a neurogenic bladder have those conditions as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've heard you say in previous conversations that there are factors that have actually nothing to do with the bladder that could contribute to a UTI.
Yeah. Talking about a female postmenopausal population, one of the huge, huge risk factors for infections are some hormonal changes that happen related to menopause. So atrophic vaginitis, or it's been renamed genitourinary syndrome of menopause, they have a lot of vaginal dryness. And that vaginal dryness, A, is uncomfortable. It can mimic an infection, burning, itching, you know, some of the other symptoms that go along with it. It also changes the environment around the bladder. So you get a lot more clustering of bacteria in the area there. And, you know, just with how women are built, it's not very far from the outside to the inside. So it's not too hard for a few bacteria to make it into the bladder. And then if they're not drinking enough fluid or not emptying the bladder, it's kind of like the perfect storm of once the bacteria get there, then they're going to stay and they could cause an infection. So managing some of the aspects around the bladder. Is the patient constipated? Do they have loose stools? You know, bowel issues can precede bladder issues. A lot of times I'll say, I haven't had an infection in years. And then I had this really bad bout of diarrhea. Now I've had like two back-to-back infections. Well, you know, what caused that really bad bout of diarrhea? And is there something that we could take a few steps back with bowel management to hopefully reduce their risks going forward? So, you know, those are just a couple of examples of non-neurogenic, non-bladder conditions that can have a big effect.
Thank you for sharing that. Just in closing now, are there any pearls of wisdom that you want to, you know, kind of last minute words of wisdom that you'd want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, UTIs are common. I mean, it's one of the most common reasons that women specifically, but, you know, patients seek care from a physician, emergency room visits, things like that. And it is, it's getting harder and harder to treat infections. We're getting bacteria that are more and more resistant. We're having less and less new antibiotics going out. I tell a lot of patients the best way to treat an infection is not to get one in the first place. And that's why I really focus on prevention. Let's make sure there's nothing structural, functional, anatomical in the way. But then a lot of it is really education and giving patients tools that they can use to maintain a healthy urinary tract, which should reduce their risk of infections overall.
That makes perfect sense. Yeah, I completely agree. Patient education is so important. I really, really appreciate your time today and, you know, kind of going over this newly created UTI risk factor model, which is a great way for physicians, especially or clinicians, to help target those risk factors for their patient population, whether it be the neurogenic population, or in your case, primarily a non-neurogenic patient population. So thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge today, and I look forward to the next time that we can speak.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Bowel and Bladder Matters podcast, part of Coloplast Professional, where we believe clinician education related to ostomies and continence matters. For more educational resources from Coloplast, visit us at coloplast.us/professional.